You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Colt Molesky here, as well as Trey Flynn. We are bringing you daily Timberwolves content. We will be here each and every day of the week. Make sure you're going and checking out right after you're done here the Locked On NBA podcast. That is a great way to get ready for news and information from around the NBA, getting you up to date on everything you need to know about the league you love to watch so very much. And today, we're going to be getting you ready for the Atlanta Hawks. The Timberwolves are playing them, but we're going to be talking a lot about rookies today and about the way that you can play your rookies, how to best acclimate them to the NBA, all that good stuff. Maybe some of the Atlanta rookies versus some of the Timberwolves rookies. And as far as classes go, I was kind of thinking about the rookies headed into this game, thinking about the different types of rookies that joined the NBA this year. Last year was supposed to be the rookie class, Trey, that was going to blow everybody off the face of the earth. I'm not sure that it's not this year's class.
Yeah, this year's class is really, really deep. I feel like there's a new rookie popping up every week. I mean, people were saying 2 weeks ago that Jaren Jackson Jr. was going to be like rookie of the year, and now we're seeing Luka Doncic wins games for the end of the Mavericks, essentially every game. So there's just so many guys. It's so deep. Just 1 through 30, there was just a lot of real raw talent in the draft, and a lot of these teams are utilizing that raw talent. As for other teams, maybe like the Timberwolves as an example, keeping guys like Okogie on the bench, maybe halting their growth, but, you know, we don't know yet. So overall, though, a great draft class.
Really deep draft class. And when you're looking at these two teams, it's really interesting to see not only how Atlanta has been playing. Obviously, the situations are a little different. Atlanta is severely worst team, a little less expectations around Atlanta versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. But it is interesting to see the two strategies there where Atlanta, they're trying to play their young guys a lot. And not just Trae Young, but the last couple of drafts, whatever young guys they have, they're trying to throw them out there a lot, trying to get them a lot of reps, trying to get a lot of mileage under their belts right away so they can get acclimated to the NBA very quickly versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. You really have to earn your minutes. You really have to earn your time out on the floor. Is there a better way, or is there an approach that both teams are hitting and it's good for their situation more than there's a right way to do this?
I guess it all depends on the expectations of the franchise for the year that those rookies are drafted in. As for Minnesota, after making the playoffs this past year, getting Josh Okogie, everyone kind of and Keita Bates-Diop, everyone kind of realized that those guys would most likely come off the bench, or at least Josh Okogie would, which is what's happening. And nobody really expected Okogie to get more than 20 minutes a game for the most part, just because they know Tom Thibodeau isn't about doing that with younger guys. And also, the team wants to make the playoffs again. He may not be the best talent option at the beginning of the season, rather. Now we see how talented he is, and we know he needs more playing time. But if your expectations are lower, let's say for the Atlanta Hawks, you can go ahead and play guys like Kevin Huerter or Trae Young, or even guys who are past rookies like John Collins, a lot of minutes. And even guys like Amari Spellman from Villanova, who Atlanta took late in the draft, has gotten some major minutes for Atlanta off the bench and had some really good games. So it really just depends on your expectations. And sometimes these teams who are really fighting for a higher draft pick and kind of tanking, if you will, they'll play their rookies a lot, not just to tank, but also to get them more experience. A great example is the head coach that Atlanta got was Lloyd Pierce this offseason. Pierce was an assistant coach for the Philadelphia 76ers over the past 4 or 5 years and was involved through the process the whole entire time with Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and trying to figure out how to build that team with your young players. So when they brought in Pierce, they were hoping that he could do the same thing with Trae Young, Taurean Prince, Kevin Huerter, and John Collins, which it looks like they might be doing because those guys are really good individually. It's just going to take them a little bit to get better as they get older.
See, I think that there are a couple different approaches. I think that the way you view your player is important to this. And so if you think that a guy like Trae Young is going to be a franchise guy for a lot of years, you should play him a lot of minutes to really try and get him up to speed as fast as possible. And while I think that both these teams are in different situations, I think that the way you think about your player should be the end all be all for how you're playing them, and it shouldn't matter your situation as much. So if the Timberwolves think that Josh Okogie is really good and could be a really big piece in their franchise going forward, I think that they should play him a lot of minutes, even though they're trying to get wins now, even though they have a lot of veterans on this team, they have some older guys that they expect more of. I think they should play Josh Okogie a lot. I think for both these teams, the expectations around the rookie should dictate how you're playing them and what spots you're playing them more than the situation your team is in. And so if I'm thinking about it that way, then both these teams and their high value rookies should be playing a lot of minutes. And I think that kind of taps into what you and I have been talking about the last week and a half, 2 weeks, which is that Josh Okogie really should get more because the Timberwolves are expecting so much of him. And they shouldn't pull back on the reins just because they're trying to make a playoff push here and they've got other guys that they are paying more money and want to get more production out of. If you think that Josh Okogie is going to be good for your team for the next 4 or 5 years, get him reps now. Get him reps right away. Get him acclimated right away, because he could help you with that push right now, not just in the next 3 years.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's just how do they go about doing that? Who do they take minutes away? If Tom Thibodeau sees Josh Okogie as an athletic wing that can play the 3-and-D ball, or even just a shooting guard that plays really well at the defensive end, a great guy to look at would be like Andre Roberson and how the Oklahoma City Thunder use Andre Roberson. Now, of course, Josh Okogie has more of an athletic skill set on the offensive end than Andre Roberson, but if you can kind of build a role player such as Josh Okogie to that defensive prowess of Roberson, then you can make a really solid bench asset or even a starting asset in the future with Okogie. But you got to play in minutes. Roberson got a lot of minutes in his young career with Oklahoma City. Of course, he was playing with all-star, superstar players. But Okogie's playing with Karl Anthony Towns, and Karl Anthony Towns is one of the best players in the league. So give him minutes with Towns, give him minutes with Wiggins, let him get used to that starting lineup. And he's played with the best of the best on the defensive end. He's played with Jimmy Butler, and now he's playing with Robert Covington. If Tom Thibodeau wants to build a defensive threat that can play pretty well on offense, now's the time to do it. It's just the question, the question that we keep asking every podcast, not to beat a dead horse, is who do we take minutes away from? Who do you take minutes away from in this lineup? And if it's Tyus Jones and Jeff Teague, do you give more minutes to Derrick Rose on the point guard position? It's tough.
You're right. It is tough finding minutes, and the Boston Celtics have proven that you can have a team that's loaded with great talent, and it still comes down to finding that perfect lineup, finding the perfect minute amounts for each one of these guys and who to play them with. It's definitely tough. And I like that Andre Roberson comparison for the Oklahoma City Thunder for Josh Okogie. I have another one for you, and it is John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks, the team they're playing tonight. I think that's somebody who is really athletic, really great in transition, can really crash the boards, be an uber-physical player who's also good on the defensive end. And they played him last year, and he was kind of finding himself, kind of finding his way. Averaged 10.5 points per game, 7.3 rebounds. Now this year, already you see that jump in growth. I know the sample size is a little smaller because he hasn't played a ton of games this year, but he's averaging 18.6 points per game, 10 rebounds, and 0.6 blocks per game. You've seen the big jump. He's shooting 58% from the field. There's a big jump, a big curve that he's hitting, and I think for some of these uber athletes who you can expect to get stuff out of them regardless, I think that maybe the curve is a little quicker. Would you agree? And is John Collins kind of the trajectory you can expect from Josh Okogie?
The versatility of John Collins and Josh Okogie is the biggest comparison I see there. You can play them at different positions, different switches. And because Josh Okogie is so lengthy and athletic, he can switch between the 1 and 3 pretty easily. On the defensive end especially. And with John Collins, you see him do that from the 3 to 5 every game. And just the production increase that John Collins has seen over this past year, he's probably number one in my mind right now, next to De'Aaron Fox for most improved player of the year. He's averaging 18.6 points per game as opposed to 10.5 last year. He's taking three-point shots, not necessarily making them, but just because he's taking three-point shots is a great sign for the future of John Collins because he's not afraid to do so. Unlike other young players like Ben Simmons, for example, who thinks it's more efficient to just drive down the lane. Collins, who is a big man, who is amazing on the defensive end and great on the offensive end, is deciding to play to his strengths but also try to improve his weaknesses. So that's a great sign from a 21-year-old. I'd love to see that more from Josh Okogie. And Josh Okogie this year is averaging 19 minutes a game, and in Collins' rookie year, he averaged 24 minutes a game. So I mean, even that extra 5 minutes can get a guy like Okogie more confidence and more room to grow in the future. So I definitely think there's something to what you're saying in that comparison. I think it is the Atlanta Hawks are a really bad basketball team last year, and they were able to give Collins more minutes, not only to benefit them in the draft, but also to benefit them with their rookies. And so if Tom Thibodeau and Glenn Taylor want to decide to give Okogie more minutes, they really have to figure out who they want to take that away from. And I know you've said this a lot, Gorgui Jang may be that guy to take minutes away from. And if you take minutes away from Jang, you got to increase some minutes and maybe a guy like Darius Arch. So maybe that's for the best too.
I hate to break this up, but we do have to get to some sponsors. So we're going to get to some sponsors quick, and then we're going to dive back into this conversation about rookies, about the Atlanta Hawks, getting you prepped for this game, all that good stuff coming right around the corner. Trey Flynn talking with Colt Molesky about the Atlanta Hawks. We've been talking about rookies, and it really is a fascinating thing on how to play rookies, how to maximize your rookies and get the most out of them, how to get their growth started right away and not stunt their growth from the jump, how to play them the best amount of minutes, how to find the best spots for them on a roster. It really is not only important stuff for NBA rosters, but it is really just fascinating stuff in general to think about, to watch as teams grow or as teams are putting their players in great spots or terrible spots. It is a fascinating thing to watch. And when you're looking at the Atlanta Hawks, it's a team that's banking on all of their young guys panning out, because as far as older guys, they don't really have anybody that can add stability to this roster right now, because, and they're a team that hasn't even won double-digit wins, and so they really need all these young guys to pan out quickly. If you're looking just at, as a whole, the Atlanta Hawks and their youth, is it mostly positives for you? Do you like their youth even though they're losing a lot of games? Do you like where they could be headed? Do you dislike their young guys? Do you not think there's enough there? Do you not trust Trae Young to be the guy to lead all these young guys into more successful futures? What do you think of the Atlanta Hawks, the young Hawks as a whole right now, as you get ready for tonight's game against them for the Timberwolves?
I think the Hawks are really building for the long term. They're not worried about winning or going to the playoffs the next 3 to 4 years. They're really thinking the next 5 to 7 years they're going to try to build a small ball future NBA lineup. And they're doing it quite well, I might add. Just getting guys like Justin Anderson and DeAndre Bembry, who are young dudes who can ball off the bench, like those are big pickups for a team that's falling apart. If you could compare to them to other teams with 9 wins, whether it's like the Phoenix Suns, who aren't doing a good job of that, who are getting guys like Austin Rivers and then buying them out for no reason, those are bad moves. Atlanta's trying to hold on to their draft picks, get younger guys, and maybe not necessarily make one of the players their cornerstone of the franchise, like Trae Young. They might not want him to be the cornerstone, but that's what the NBA has been perpetuating for them, that Trae Young is going to be their Stephen Curry, and Atlanta's really never said that. So I kind of like this lineup that they have built here. I can see it for like a year from now, seeing a Trae Young, Kevin Herter, Taurean Prince, Amari Spellman, John Collins lineup, and that sounds sweet. I mean, all those players can do so many different things on both ends of the basketball, and just seeing a Kevin Herter, Trae Young backcourt a few years from now and the potential perimeter threats that they can be in this league or already are, that's really, really exciting. So they have a lot of – they can only go up from here, I guess, is ultimately what I'm saying. Atlanta really can't fall back from where they're at right now. So if I'm an Atlanta Hawks fan, I'm pretty happy right now.
Yeah, I mean – obviously, they're probably gonna get knocked for the Luka Doncic, Trae Young trade for a while. And while you can argue the pluses and minuses of that, they do need a point guard. They do need a point guard to bring them in the future. And as far as the moves that this franchise has made over the last 6 years, it's not terrible. I mean, they sold on that. What was it? They won 60 games in 2014, was it, or 2015? something like that. But it was like 3-4 years ago, 5 years ago maybe. They won 60 games, but they sold on that team quickly and didn't try and keep around these older guys who they're hoping to stay successful, kind of like the Brooklyn Nets did with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. So they sold on those guys quickly. They jumped right into this new version of the NBA where they're grabbing a lot of stretchy wing guys and point guards who can space the floor really well and move the ball quickly. And they're going for pace and space, and they're going for threes and shooting a lot of three-point attempts. And so you can see the version of the team they're shooting for, and you can see what they're kind of going for. And the blueprint is really good. I really love Taurean Prince and John Collins, those wing guys. I really like both of those guys and what they could be potentially in the next couple of years. And so I like their blueprint. And you brought up the Phoenix Suns. The Atlanta Hawks are just trying to play it smart, trying to build a roster, and they're not doing stupid stuff, which is something that I think, like, the Phoenix Suns, they talked about the move they made with Phil Rivers or the whole trading situation they had with the Wizards. They just kind of do stupid things. And while you can be frustrated with the losses for the Atlanta Hawks right now, they're not doing dumb stuff. You can see what they're trying to do. You can see the future they're trying to build. And there's something to be said for that, for the patience of it.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that Atlanta had the chance to sell jerseys and hold on to Carmelo Anthony this offseason and decided to buy him out really showed me that they could care less about getting, like, a player like that just to sell jerseys, which is a big deal for a franchise that probably needs the money. So, like, those are great signs. And if you just look at this lineup up and down, it's full of young guys, but they also were really careful to get veterans. Getting Vince Carter this offseason was huge just to build some of these younger dudes. Jeremy Lin, one of the nicest guys around the league, can really show these guys what it's like to persevere and be resilient in this league. And then Kent Bazemore has to be one of the nicer guys in the league. He's like one of players around the league love Kent Bazemore. When he becomes a free agent and he can sign the minimum anywhere, I'd expect him to go to like Golden State just because they would love a guy like that. So they have some really solid veterans on this Hawks team. And they have a foundation. They won 60 games like 3 or 4 years ago. Their whole team, like, won player of the month, I think, at one point. And like they have a foundation. They just need to get back to it, but kind of build for the future and not sit in the past. Phoenix is trying to build a team right now that's like kind of based off that old Lakers team with like Kobe and Shaquille O'Neal. They want like a Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton like team. And while both teams have there's a good future line for them, Atlanta's trying to really fight for that small ball, spread the floor, kind of line up, pace it, high pace. And if anything, I could see Atlanta doing what the Sacramento Kings are doing this year for next year. So I could see Atlanta being the future Sacramento Kings of the East and maybe making a run for that 8th or 7th seed next year, which is a lot to say for them. But that's how high I am on this team. And it's all relative. Like, an 8th seed in the East isn't fantastic, but just how bad Atlanta's been the past few years, that'd be great for that fan base. So I love what they're doing with their rookies ultimately. And kind of going back on your earlier point, every team in that top five made a mistake for not fighting harder for getting Luka Doncic.
That's fair.
I wrote about this doing a mock draft in the summer, and I had Luka going number one, and I was criticized by people in the comment section. And I was like, how are we not saying Luka Doncic is going to be the best player out of this draft class? He's obviously the only guy who's been playing with grown men for the past few years.
He's already an MVP.
Yeah, he's already a candidate for one of the best players in the league. Like, that's ridiculous. I think Bill Simmons had him as, like, the 6th highest trade potential out of everyone in the league over guys like Russell Westbrook. So,
yeah, you'll get no argument from me. I thought he was the best player in the draft. And I thought Jaren Jackson was the 2nd best player, honestly. So those were my top 2 guys over guys like Ayton and Bagley and even Trae Young. So you'll get no argument from me. That said, I do like the blueprint of this team. And I wanted to ask you, 4 years from now, just with the blueprint of these two teams and kind of the trajectories they have set up for it, 4 years from now, are the Hawks better than the Timberwolves?
Ooh. Oh, man, this is a good one. I'm going to say no. I think Minnesota has a really good chance in 4 years to hopefully see a breakup in the Western Conference with these Warriors and Rockets squads. And I don't think you'll see Kevin Durant on the Warriors in 4 years. I don't think you'll see, obviously, Chris Paul probably won't be anything on the Rockets anymore in 4 years. I think the Wolves might have a better chance to be like a 5th seed, for example, in 4 years. Just because I'm so high on Karl-Anthony Towns, and I'm not really sure what the Wolves are going to do with Andrew Wiggins, but he always has room for production and improvement, and he has trade value if need be. I think the Eastern Conference is going to become the new Western Conference essentially in 3 or 4 years. And that's a longer conversation to have. But I think guys, teams like Philadelphia and Boston are really going to turn into huge dynasties almost for the Eastern Conference. And even like Toronto if Kawhi stays. So I think Atlanta is going to be in a good spot 3 to 4 to 5 years from now. This is going to be very, very difficult to play in.
I'm filing that away for a future podcast. I like the topic that you just brought up. But as far as the question I pose to you, there is a route, and it is unlikely, but there is a route where Tibbs and the Timberwolves really close out this season well, and they somehow, because the margin is so slim between the 8th seed and like the 3rd seed, there is a route where the Timberwolves actually somehow lock into a different side of themselves that we kind of think and suspect is there and play themselves into like the 5th seed or even the 6th seed in the playoffs, and the Timberwolves extend Tibbs. That is a scenario. It's an unlikely one, and it would be a miracle for the but it would be tough for the Timberwolves just to make the 8th seed right now. But there is like a formula where the Timberwolves end up extending Tibbs, and I think that messes them up for the future seasons.
Yeah, so I had one of my writers at Dunking with Wolves, Pat Hall, who wrote an article yesterday, quick plug about him. He wrote an article saying that if Tom Thibodeau decides to leave this offseason or gets fired, you could potentially see Derrick Rose and guys like Taj Gibson leaving with him. And that, even though I love Derrick Rose and this team, he's played so well, and there is potential for this whole team to make the playoffs, and then Thibodeau getting an extension, that might be the best case scenario, regardless if Minnesota goes to the playoffs, is that Thibodeau gets released, or if Thibodeau leaves this offseason. Just building a team around Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Robert Covington, and Dario Saric, and letting guys go like Rose and Taj Gibson and whomever, even Jeff Teague, might be the new route that the Minnesota Timberwolves should go on. And again, that's probably a bit larger conversation, but I kind of like that idea in the future. I think Minnesota needs a new look. Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns are going to be entering the, if you will, like a prologue to their stardom the next few years at 24 years old. So they might need a new look in that coaching rotation, and that might be the best move to make.
I'm still all aboard the Becky Hammon trade for the Timberwolves as far as their next head coach.
I'm so glad he said that. I'm all aboard Becky Hammon. Becky Hammon, I think, is – I've written like 3 things about this for Becky Hammon from Minnesota, but she's my number one coaching candidate if we release Thibodeau.
I've been beating this drum since like I think March or something like that, and so I'm definitely not going to leave that that trail now. If the Spurs are as smart as I think they are, they probably already have like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, stay around till Popovich is done, and there will be good things if that happens, kind of deal. And so I fear that probably won't happen now, because I think last year might have been the year to go and grab her, but I would really love to see her join. Because here's the thing. Not only is that a great new look for the Timberwolves to and like a great thing, just a great narrative to start the season. Just like, hey, first female head coach, she's super smart. We're trying to get smarter, and so we brought her in, and she's going to revolutionize some of the things. We have this this guy who made his name off of defense, and that wasn't really working out, and he wasn't really embracing the small ball to the full potential of this team. Now we're bringing this super smart head coach, and it's the first woman head coach, and we're going to be trying new things, and that's a new thing, and we're going to be trying new things with her, and we're really going to turn all the creativity over to her, and we're going to let her do all the new stuff she wants to do with this roster. And then I think she could probably pull a lot of the best out of some of these young guys, because she is really smart and she is a really great basketball mind. I think it would just be a great new look and new direction for the Timberwolves. I think everything would really, really work out and be a really awesome new jumpstart for the Timberwolves if they did that. But again, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if she leaves the Spurs now.
Yeah, as for Mickey Hayman, like last year she came like second in interviewing for the GM spot in Milwaukee. And I mean, I was all aboard that too. I was like, oh my God, Becky's Bucks, the potential with the advertising of this, like it would be amazing. But I mean, like they didn't take the chance on her and other teams didn't either. And I agree with you. San Antonio probably has something worked up with her. Like they know Popovich is probably almost done and he probably knows that too. Especially with the rough past year he's had with his personal life. So like, I think that that's probably the move for them to try to get her to become the new head coach once Popovich leaves, because that would just be a great story in general, especially with how Popovich has handled his political arena on Twitter or whatever. Like, he's such a political guy, so I could totally see him selling that really high. But as for Minnesota, like, ultimately, I just think that moving on from Thibodeau is the best idea moving forward. Thibodeau is just a head coach of the old NBA, almost like that grumpy, hardworking uncle that you might have. Now we just need a really cool uncle instead of the grumpy one to get along with these young guys. So we just need a new look.
All right, we're going to get into some matchups and predictions here. First, we're going to take a break for some sponsors. So this Atlanta Hawks game has led us down some fun little trails, some nooks and crannies, and I've enjoyed it. But now we got to get into the present, into tonight's game against the Atlanta Hawks. And if you're looking at this game, another one of those must-win situations for the Timberwolves. We've already kind of alluded to the tough trip that they have coming for them, the tough schedule they have up ahead. And we'll get into that more on Monday's podcast, really looking at the next stretch of games for the Timberwolves and how defining that could be for them. But as far as tonight's game, another just take-care-of-business type of game. They're at home against a 9-win team. This is one where they should win by 12.
Yeah, I agree. Atlanta's 3-1 in their past four games, coming off a loss against the Indiana Pacers, losing 121-129. But they beat teams like Washington and Detroit, which are solid organizations. Well, Washington had hiccups, obviously. And the New York Knicks, they beat handedly, too. So they're coming off some good looks. So that's something to watch out for. I'm going to say this game was won by Minnesota about like 7 to 9 points, 7 to 10 points. Solid win, solid W at home. Pull away with the win, and then hopefully get started on this 3-game winning streak, since we're coming off 2 wins in a row against Chicago and Oklahoma City. Moving into this 3-game away stretch, we're going to go against with the Miami Heat, New Orleans Pelicans, and Boston Celtics.
Well, the one concern I have for the Timberwolves, just looking at this game, is there is a scenario where the Hawks just kind of knock down everything. You've seen a little bit of regression as far as three-point shooting for the Timberwolves. They start out so well from outside and really stretching the floor, taking 33s, three-point attempts per game. Now they're around 28, 29 three-point attempts per game, knocking down about 10 and shooting 36% from three-point range. So you see them kind of going back to their old ways, not really stretching the floor maybe as much as they could, not really spacing out as much as they should around Towns. The Atlanta Hawks, though, fourth in the NBA in three-point attempts. They take 34.8 three-point attempts per game, knock down 11.5, and they're shooting 33% from the three-point range. So there's a scenario where they're throwing up 33s and they're actually catching fire and they're starting to catch up on the Timberwolves. They're starting to knock down a bunch of three-point shots and have the Timberwolves on their heels a little bit. That said, I think that the Timberwolves just have shown a level of maturity this year in the fourth quarter of games that keeps me from really getting nervous like I did last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit nervous about the three-point. I was about to bring that up. Like, they shot 36 threes against Indiana, made 47% of those. And then one thing they tend to do that really frustrates me to no end is when other teams start getting fired up and hitting a couple threes in a row, getting some fast-paced dunks in transition, Minnesota seems to put their heads down, like specifically Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins. Like, they'll start to get a little sad, if you will, and it's kind of depressing, and they end up giving up these runs to no matter what team it is. And if Atlanta shoots 43s in this game and makes 20 of them, I could see that happening a couple times. But at the end of the day, I can't see Towns and this team in the fourth quarter letting Atlanta win this game. And I would just watch out for guys like John Collins, who's going to be probably defending against Taj Gibson. And as great as Taj Gibson has been this season and consistent over the past few years, John Collins is an athletic freak. So I would just watch out for him and how Kevin Herter plays against Andrew Wiggins as well.
I'm not 100% sure that the Wolves have a heat check guy, like a Deion Waiters heat check guy.
At this moment, I guess it's Robert Covington, just like how he scored 9 points in the last 4 minutes last game. But he – or not this past game against the Thunder. But he at times can be inconsistent. Like we saw last game, I think he was like 1 for 8 from three. So as of right now, it's probably Covington or Rose. But there's not a definite guy like a Deion Waiters type. Not that I really want a Deion Waiters. But, I mean, as for right now, it's probably Derrick Rose or Robert Covington. I'd always give it to Rose at the end of the game if need be. I know a lot of people feel a different way about that. Only if Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't want the ball. The heat check guy should obviously be Towns. I know that it's usually not the big man. But he needs to get the ball at the end of games. But as for right now, we've been giving a lot to Derrick Rose.
Yeah, and I think if you name like three different guys who could be your heat check guy, that's kind of an indicator that you probably don't have one.
Right.
But yeah, I just think about that right now. I guess that's kind of problematic. I don't know. There's obviously bigger things to worry about, but it seems like 20 of the NBA teams have a guy they're like who they know will heat check another team when they get going. And if the Atlanta Hawks. If the Atlanta Hawks knock down 4 threes in a row, I'm not sure who the guy is who kind of halts that run. I mean, maybe Derrick Rose, but he's not really super comfortable shooting threes. Like, that's not really his game. And when you're going against an Atlanta Hawks team that could wrap off 3 or 4 threes in a row, you really need somebody to knock down a triple in their face on the other end and kind of slow things down, get the crowd back into it.
Well, that's why I'm all about moving Dario Saric in the starting lineup. You get a guy like a stretch four like Saric out there who can, in transition, get a spot up three at his size. It's such a deflator to the opponent that I think that's a necessary move right now. And I've been on the Jeff Teague the train for a while about moving him out or getting Rose in there or Tyus Jones in there for a while now. But I'm definitely been sold on this Taj Gibson move to the bench and get Saric in there at times to just pick up this team, especially when they're down. He just seems to not give an F about anything in the world. He does not care at all if the other team is, you know, killing it or someone's in his face yelling in his face. He's just cold, and I appreciate that about him, and I think he can like knock down some really important shots at the end of the game. So he's a guy to watch out for sure.
Yeah, I really like Dario Saric. I would love to see him play more minutes. I'm not against that at all. Just as far as this game kind of wrapping up, I do believe that the Timberwolves win this game. I think this might end up being a high-scoring affair just because I think, like we were talking about, I think you could see Atlanta wrap off a few threes at some point in this game and make it tight, and then the Timberwolves have to push away again this onslaught from the Hawks and pull away. But I think this one ends up being like a 112-102 type of game, 111-103 type of game, and with the Timberwolves being victorious, and God help us if they lose.
Yeah, God help us if they lose, for sure, 100%. But I will say, like, Atlanta has only gone under 100 points offensively twice in December and only held their opponent under 100 twice in December. So you're 100% correct, I think, in your prediction of this game being in the hundreds. I'm going to say probably similar off yours, 112, 104, around there. So ultimately it'll be a win, I believe, and I think Minnesota will get their 3-game win streak and hopefully pick some heads up.
And just as far, just quickly, the two players I'm going to watch the most in this game, I think, are going to be John Collins for the Atlanta Hawks. I love John Collins. I've been on the John Collins train since he was in college, and I love watching him play since he was at Wake Forest. And so I love watching him play. I'm super ready to see the kind of fun alley-oops and transition plays that he makes. And then for the Timberwolves side, I think this one is one of those where Derrick Rose has to keep the Timberwolves playing fast. I know you don't want to get caught up into maybe a style that the other team is dictating, but I think that this team is young enough where if you just match their pace, it will throw them off, honestly. And as weird as that sounds, I think that if the Timberwolves just play fast with the Atlanta Hawks, they're not going to have any idea what to do with the Timberwolves on defense, and so that it's going to end up working against them. And I think Derrick Rose is the guy to lead them in that pace.
Yeah, I definitely like the Derrick Rose call. I think he'll ultimately be the fourth quarter guy, as I said before. I know that John Collins is going to have a big game no matter what the Wolves try to do against him, whoever they play on him. So the guy I'm watching no matter what in this game, because I think he'll be the real difference maker if he can score 25 and 10, then the Wolves probably will not come out with the win this game, will be Trae Young. If he starts getting hot early or late, I would get worried for the Wolves, because when he does get hot, the other team seems to fall apart just because it's such a disheartening thing to see this guy pull up from 30 feet at times. I know he's not shooting he's actually shooting a terrible 25% from three this year, but he's had games, random games, where he goes like 5 of 8 from three, and those 5 threes he makes aren't just pick and pop threes. He's like seriously like 30 to 32 feet away from the basket, and he's not knocking down shots. So if that kind of stuff happens, like, this is going to get tough to watch. As for Minnesota, the guy to watch for me is Karl-Anthony Towns. I think he's going to rip apart Dwayne Dedmon on the offensive end. Mm. Dedmon's had a pretty solid year. He's been actually a pretty nice pickup for Atlanta to fill in that center position to let Collins play the power forward. But I want to see Karl-Anthony Towns tear apart Dedmon. And coming off a 20-20 game for Towns, 20-20-4, usually after those games, Towns kind of gets like a 16-8 performance. I want to see him go for it again. Get a two games in a row, 20-20. I want to see Towns knock him down. He's our big star. He has to play big.
Let's have another 50-point game, Towns. Let's go. I'm all in for it. Let's do it.
Love it.
All right, that's it for us. He's Trey Flynn. I'm Colton Molesky, and this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.